This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you in. We got some football tonight, boys. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw, there at the South Point in Las Vegas, and they're starting to buy the Utes. Remember, yesterday, 4.5, no Cam Rising. It'll be interesting. Brant Keithy, if he doesn't play, remember, Keithy in 21, and Amal, you and I were discussing the tight end. Last year against Florida, had a big day, then got injured like a week or two later. But Keithy was on the same team as Dalton Kincaid, who's catching balls for the Bills, and he was a better tight end. Like, if we're being honest, take a look at his numbers from 21. So I bring that up because it looks like Keithy's going to be out, Cam Rising going to be out, but we say hi to the boys that we can start there. What's going on, Amal?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Brant Keithy, great point you made. 9 catches, a buck 05 and a touchdown last time in Gainesville. Crucial member of that game. If you look at the box score, Patrick, there were 55 points scored in that game, 22 in the fourth quarter. But neither team was really being slowed down. I think it'll be a bit of a different game today just based on the fact that you've got different quarterback play here. I don't know if you guys remember that 2-point conversion Anthony Richardson had last year late in the game that made it 22-19, I believe. He kind of gives a pump fake, takes on the defender, spins out of it, makes the play. I think it was Justin Short who was standing wide open in the end zone. But, I mean, both teams were moving the ball fairly well in that game. I think it'll be a bit more of a challenge here. I know Samich is on the under 22 in the first half. I like this play. I think it's going to be tough to get 4 scoring drives out of these offenses just based on the quarterback play. I told you, I'm an anti-Graham Mertz guy, Patrick. I don't know where you come in on him, but to me, I think if you're Florida, you got to play field position, take advantage of opportunities you have, and then hope to be able to make plays.
Anti-game manager Graham Mertz plus Montel Johnson and Trevor Etienne, second year in the system. I totally agree with you. I don't see points tonight. We lost the best of it, 50.5, big guy. Opener for DraftKings on the total. They're sitting 44.5, so hate to give it out as you lose about 6 there. But again, Salt Lake tonight, and we'll get into Nebraska and Minnesota as well. Utah, Dustin Sweetelson going for a three-peat in the Pac-12. Florida, obviously not in the conference, but the Utes are going to want to make a statement tonight. And honestly, two programs with a different trajectory, Dustin. It's Whittingham and Utah eyeing a playoff berth. And conversely, it's Florida breaking in a new quarterback, a coach that's trying to find his footing, get comfortable, reinforce that defensive front, bring in transfers. But it's going to take another year for Florida. I love what you got, and that is Florida sitting plus 7.
Yeah, really happy I got that number now with the way things have kind of shaken out over the last few days. One thing I keep thinking about, though, is, you know, we had some discussions on the show yesterday about Trey Lance in the NFL, and I want to draw a parallel to this game in Trey Lance. We didn't get a chance to fairly evaluate Trey Lance, so I think it's tough to say either way what he is as a quarterback just because we didn't see it. I think we are way too quick to write off Billy Napier based on what we saw in 1 year of him at Florida. He was a good coach at Louisiana, and it's a transition period with the transfer portal the way it is. He had players coming and going. So you're not only teaching the people who are there a new system, you're teaching new players a new system. I'm not saying he's a good coach. What I will tell you is he's pretty good on week one. I went back and did the research. Billy Napier on week one versus Power 5 opponents, he is 4-0 ATS, just 2-2 straight up. He was an underdog in all of those games, 4-0 ATS. Last year won outright as a dog versus Utah at home. 2021 covered 37.5 points against Texas when he was at Louisiana. 2020 beat number 23 Iowa State as an 11.5 point underdog.
Slow down because this is very good information. Let's start over with Napier.
Napier week one versus Power 5 opponents. 4-0 nice. ATS, just 2-2 straight up. Always has been the underdog. 22 won as an underdog outright at home in the Swamp. 21 covered a 37.5 point spread at Texas. Final was 38-18. In 2020, beat number 23 Iowa State outright as an 11.5 point underdog. And then 2019 on a neutral site, covered versus Mississippi State and Mike Leach as 22.5 underdogs, losing 38-28. I don't know if he's a good coach. Don't know if he's a great coach. I just know we are way too quick to write him off just because year one didn't go well.
Tremendous information. Go ahead, Amal.
I don't know anybody that's written him off yet, though.
People are acting like he's overmatched. Obviously, everyone loves Whittingham. People are acting like the Florida program is in disarray. They're doubting what they're capable of this year. We don't know what he's going to be.
I appreciate everything you just said, and I think you laid out a great argument that's pro Billy Napier. Here's the problem for me. If you are the starting quarterback at Wisconsin and can't be the starter there, and Florida picks you as their starting quarterback, there's a serious problem in Gainesville in terms of quarterback play.
I will just corroborate just quickly what Dustin's saying. I do have a friend who went to Florida, and Napier's getting clowned up and down. Almost like feels like he's overmatched. But go ahead, Amal.
No, I'm just saying I don't have an assessment on Napier. I thought he did a great job before he got to Florida. However, the one thing you see with so many coaches, with the exception of maybe Brian Kelly and a couple others here or there, guys that come from the group of five, the entire dynamic changes because of recruiting. You're recruiting at a different level. You're recruiting against different teams. And I think that's where really the rubber meets the road for so many of these coaches that we've seen make the jump and how they transition. And Brian Kelly's one I mentioned that has done a great job. But then you saw Butch Jones following the footsteps of Brian Kelly, and then he gets to Tennessee and falls flat on his face. I'm not saying Napier's not going to be good or things aren't going to get better for the Gators. I just think in this matchup, you've got a coach that's historically been great in bowl games. When given time to prepare, Kyle Whittingham has done a great job. That was a game last year that Utah, realistically, if they were being honest in their self-evaluation, blew that game and squandered the lead.
We keep on crushing Graham Mertz, and I totally agree with you, Amal, for good reason. He's not exactly electric, but Cam Rising is electric, and this Utah offense is run-based, throw to the tight end, and let Rising make something happen. That's not Bryson Barnes. And frankly, we saw for four seasons, at least Mertz, you know, two full seasons, but two other seasons where he played at Wisconsin. He's got experience on this level. He's older. And we've seen Bryson Barnes, who's going to quarterback tonight for Utah, attempt 59 passes. Why are we pretending like there's an imbalance at quarterback?
No, what I'm saying is that, look, Barnes is a guy where there's some unknowns right now. There's no question about it, even though he played in the Rose Bowl, played against Washington State last year. But to me, Utah has been consistent in terms of what they want to do. Rising gave them an element that they had been lacking, really, since going back to Alex Smith. They had a guy who's dynamic, or actually the kid, Brian Johnson, excuse me. But overall, I just think that Mertz has been inconsistent in big spots outside of that first game as a freshman against Illinois, where everybody thought this guy's going to set the world on fire. He has been a pedestrian quarterback, played with a tremendous tailback in Braylon Allen and a great offensive line at Wisconsin, but could never really deliver when they needed it. And I think Florida, when you look at it talent-wise, they lose Justin Short, fifth-round pick in the NFL draft at wide receiver. They lose an incredible talent in Anthony Richardson at quarterback. I think there's some deficiencies with Florida. I think this is a good game for them to kind of judge and gauge where they're at. Also, we'll find out how good Utah is in the other 21 men outside of the quarterback position tonight.
So are you laying it with Utah tonight?
I would, yes.
Okay. Lay the 5. Now you can find, if you're with them all, you can find a 4.5. Look, Utah's defense is stacked. It was a great defense last year. The linebackers, Barton and Reed, are back. I will say Florida kind of reinforced, I talked about it at the onset, big guy, reinforced that defensive front. I think no Rising helps them, obviously. That's a duh. But both defenses will key on the run. I do like the under. It's tough at 44.5, as I mentioned, boys, off the 50.5 opener over at DraftKings. But again, you're two of that Napier system. You do like the idea. They have two stud running backs in Johnson and Etienne. And to Amal's point when we started here, offenses that want to hold, control the ball, kind of grind out a win here and get the hell out of here. Now, again, it's not going to help them in the Pac-12, but this is a statement game against an SEC team for Utah, Dustin.
Yeah, and look, like I'm not trying to knock Washington here, but like, or not Washington, or Utah here, but that's not Washington State's defense on the other side. Like, these are Florida athletes, and the people hate hearing this because there's been, if you're not from the SEC, you hate the SEC. That's kind of how college football fandom has been constructed now. It's like
they
SEC
hate us
versus
they
the
ain't
world.
Us.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are underestimating the fact that, like, I get Utah's line is great and all that, but though that's a different breed of human being that ends up in the SEC. And then another note on Graham Mertz. Like, was it him? Was it Wisconsin? Was it Paul Christ? Because I can't remember them having a vertical threat at Wisconsin in a very long time.
They never really had one. All I'm saying is, though, there's the guys that have been at Wisconsin have been terrible quarterbacks for a long time, minus Russell Wilson for one season. But it just seems like when you look at his numbers, they've decreased. His sophomore year, 61%, then 59%, then 57%. He's thrown 29 touchdowns and 21 picks in the last two seasons. And the Badgers play a similar style to what Utah employs, which is we're going to run the ball first, control the clock, and just don't make mistakes.
Yeah, I just don't think he was put in many, many positions running that offense to succeed. His one game against the Pac-12 back in 21, bowl game, Arizona State won 20-13, went 11-15, 73%, 137 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. Honestly, with the way things have shaken out with Utah health-wise, Graham Mertz doesn't have to be amazing today. He just needs to not screw it up for Florida.
I would agree. Can we just, I like the fact that we're all disagreeing. Can we, the three of us, agree that the 2023 version of Florida-Utah is going to look very different? You've got the Gators breaking in, as Amal, you mentioned, a new quarterback, new receiver rotation, mostly new offensive front, mostly new defensive front, which I keep reiterating, a new starting linebacker, two new safeties. So this is all being brought in year two by Napier. And then the reason I say Utah is going to look a lot different, Dustin and Amal, is because you're missing your two best players. If Keithy doesn't play, again, the size isn't there to be a pro, but he has electric speed at the tight end position, and Cam Rising is going to be the best player on the field if he gave it a go tonight. So I just think we're looking at a completely different game this year, and it's fascinating, frankly.
I would agree with you there, and I would, you know what, if I'd gotten the best of that number at 50 and down to 44, that's a huge movement. It would be a great one to take at 50 on the under. But to me right now, it's tough to take it 44. And I would agree with you that it is a completely different ballgame, two different quarterbacks. It's just like Notre Dame, right? You mentioned it a couple days ago or yesterday, Pine compared to Hartman. And that's kind of how the drop off is really for both teams at the quarterback position here.
I just Google, you know, you look up because Rising feels like he's been there. Bad Moon has been there for a while. When you just look up the stats and you look over and it says age and he's 24, you're missing a 24-year-old grown man that's been in Whittingham's system forever tonight. And I think Bryson Barnes has got big shoes to fill. Great start. I like the disagreements. Let's come back. Nebraska, Minnesota. Next, Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Did you get today's daily newsletter from Bill AD? If you did, he was fired up about the updated NFL betting guide because it got released this morning. Throughout the NFL preseason, our experts have been taking a look at these teams in the NFL and figuring out what to do with them. Picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, of course, the VSiN betting splits. How do you use them? And football contest strategies, you can sign up for $19 or you can save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Sign up today, vsin.com/subscribe. You know, we were joking, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. Brian Jones does a great job, CBS Sports, coming up in about 15 minutes. And we were joking about Napier getting clowned after year one at Florida, and it takes some time. And I know a friend down there, she has season tickets. She's way into the Gators. She's been going for years and years. Her family grew up Gator fans. And she said, I asked her about Napier, and she texted back another McElwain. Remember Jim McElwain? By the way, he wasn't humping the shark. And I said, well, you'd hope he's another McElwain. He won the East his first 2 years, and then he fell apart. And then he only got 3 years there. So, again, then Mullen comes in. Not necessarily what you expected. And now Napier year two, you got to give him a little time. So that's that. And like you said, I think it was you, Amal, or maybe it was Dustin. You know, Kirby Smart's getting a lot of people fired in the SEC, specifically the East.
Well, he's minus this first year where he went 4-4 in conference play. He's 44-5 in the Southeastern Conference since 2017. I mean, think about that for a second. As great as St. Nick has been, I was just looking at Kirby Smart. His wife was a basketball player at Georgia. He played in the defensive backfield at Georgia. This guy is never going anywhere unless he decides the challenge is just, hey, I want to go to the NFL, and he makes that move. But he has a chance because he's only about 48 years old, 49 years old, to have a far greater run at Georgia. And remember, they got better in-state talent than Alabama to have a better run than Nick Saban's had.
100%. 100%.
And so, the East is more winnable
East is beatable, no doubt.
The East has gotten worse now since Saban arrived. But back in the day, Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia were better than what they were producing in the West.
I'll tell you what, it'd be interesting.
And South Carolina.
Yeah. It'd be interesting with Oklahoma and Texas in the mix next year, like what the SEC landscape looks like.
Yeah, Texas looking at it beautiful. I think they're going to be great. 8-5 every year.
Nebraska, Minnesota. So yesterday we sat here, Minnesota was sitting 7. So some money coming in on Minnesota. They're up to 7.5 everywhere. And I think for good reason. Let's take a look at this game. 43 is the total. This is a Minnesota team that's won four straight in the series. The last three, by the way, they won by exactly 7 points. Just to give you an idea, including last year's win for Minnesota in Lincoln, 20-13. Now, Minnesota and what Fleck done is very interesting because they're so good defensively. Last year, 8th nationally overall, 4th in scoring defense. But the Gophers, how about this? We were just talking about Kirby and his great defense there at Georgia. The Gophers have allowed 16 or fewer points in 18 games their last two seasons. That's second best in the FBS behind only Georgia. It's a very good defense. Let's get it started here. Nebraska and Matt Rhule. There will be Rhule money coming in here because the expectations, we're showing 7. I only see 7.5, boys. Actually, I do see offshore a 7, so maybe you could still find it if you want to lay it with Minnesota. If you want to take it them all, you can find a 7.5.
Yeah, it's interesting with this team. Couple things. Number one, Billy Kemp is also a transfer in from Virginia at the wide receiver position. I really like Jeff Sims, not as a passer, but as a dual threat guy in college football. I think it's, too many times we compare what the guy's at the next level. Don't worry about that. This guy's got mobility and put some pressure on your defense. 8 starters back on the defensive side of the ball for this Nebraska team. MJ Sherman transfers in. He's the Jack linebacker for this team, comes in from Georgia, should help them only add to that defense that they've had. I can see why people have liked Nebraska a little bit in this game, but on the flip side, you laid out a great argument for the Minnesota Golden Gophers. My one concern is when you look at this team, number of returning starters, it's diminished greatly in terms of what they're bringing back. And I thought their best offensive piece, Muhammad Ibrahim, he's gone. That's a big blow for this team in terms of what they do in the running game. I'm not sure if they can be as effective as they've been in the past. I'm not saying they're not going to win the game tonight, but 7's a bit of a tricky number here. Not going to play this game, guys. I don't know where you come out on this number.
Well, here's the thing. Minnesota not only loses Ibrahim, but they lose one of their best quarterbacks in school history in Tanner Morgan. Now, here's the deal as far as Rhule and Nebraska, big guy. A vet quarterback in Sims, if he's healthy, dual threat, fun to watch down at Georgia Tech. A veteran offensive line coming back for Nebraska. A decent rush success last year, and they replaced most of the receiving weapons outside. So I do think you're going to see Rhule try to shorten this game up a little bit. An opener, again, I kind of like both unders, but we're losing the best of it. Nebraska, Minnesota over at DraftKings open 46.5. It's sitting 43, big guy.
Yeah, with Nebraska and Rhule in year one, look, he's got a lot of things to clean up, but his specialty is offensive line. And that's where they really need the most work. They allowed 33 sacks in 12 games a year ago. That was 11th in the Big Ten. Just brutal there. Rhule will instantly make that better. They struggled on the defensive side. I mean, they gave up 27.6 points per game. They had a lot of trouble stopping the run. These things all need to be cleaned up. And I just think Matt Rhule's the type of guy that's not tied to any one individual system. He just kind of finds ways to make things work and tweaks and builds teams up from the ground up. He's done it a couple times, did it at Temple, did it at Baylor. I love the fact that Jeff Sims is here because I think it gives them multiple options. It gives him his legs. He's a good, decent passer. They'll find ways to put him in optimal situations. His athleticism, though, could be what helps them win this game today because – look, Minnesota on defense is awesome. They were ranked 8th nationally, 4th in scoring a year ago. The issue is for offense. New starting quarterback, new running back. They did add a Western Michigan running back, Sean Taylor, who had over 1,000 yards a year ago. He comes in, and P.J. Fleck's the winner. P.J. Fleck won 62% of the time since he took over this job. So, I mean, he's annoying. I would never play for him. You would never play for him. Amal might because he likes his motivational phrases, but P.J. Fleck wins football games. You have to give him that. This is one of those weird games where, like, I am going with my gut over my logic in this and my bet. I'm actually going to back Nebraska. I got 7 and a hook earlier this week. I'm going to go with Nebraska. I think there's going to be opportunities for Jeff Sims to use his legs a lot in this game under pressure. And I actually think that's going to work against Minnesota. Putting Sims under pressure, letting him get out and make plays. I think he's going to do just enough in a low scoring game to cover that 7.5.
Anything on it, Amal?
No, I like the play at the 7.5. It's not a bad play when you look at this number. I'll tell you one thing about the boat rower. I was looking at his record, 5-7, 7-6, 11-2. I always kind of throw out the COVID year, 3-4. We saw Michigan went 2-4 or 5 that year as well. But 9-4 the last couple of years. You mentioned Tanner Morgan. I was not as high on him. That's why I didn't even mention him. But to me, when I look at this team, they kind of, just like we talked about Utah, there are a few teams that kind of embody their head coaches more than Utah and Minnesota in terms of what they want to do.
Follow up on the defense, Dustin?
Yeah, so Minnesota was ranked really high, as I said before, eighth nationally, fourth in scoring. But if you look at the schedule, I mean, because you're in the Big Ten,
yeah,
they didn't play a lot of great offenses. The only really good offense they played a year ago was Penn State, and they allowed 45 points. So they played New Mexico State, Western Illinois, Colorado, Michigan State, Purdue, Illinois, Rutgers, Nebraska, which they only won by 7, more on that in a second, Northwestern, Iowa, and Wisconsin. What? None of those are offensive juggernauts.
Well, Northwestern and Iowa, that's like getting two free games in the schedule and against the scoring.
Yeah, so my thought is I think maybe this defense is a little overrated in terms of the, when we just look at rankings, I think we need context for it. And I mentioned they only beat Nebraska last year by 7. Casey Thompson was injured. He didn't start that game. They had to start Chuba Purdy at quarterback, Nebraska, and that led to limited passing. They ran the ball 35 different times against Minnesota a year ago for 51 yards. That's 1.5 yards per tote. So I think if they're covering when they were that bad a year ago, 7 points, I think they should cover 7 and a hook tonight.
Rule's got to remake a really bad defense. But I was taking a look at the VSiN betting guide earlier. It sounds like he dipped into the SEC, got 5 players from the SEC. Who leaves an SEC town to go to Lincoln, Nebraska? That is a tremendous. And then they must have been at the volleyball game last night,
dude,
because the whole state showed up. Did y'all see that?
That's
tremendous. Like 90,000 people at a volleyball game.
World record.
I generally like to like make fun of those things.
Can't make fun.
I got emotional watching the coach who's been there forever and his players walk through the tunnel with like music blaring and lights going. And I'm like, this is a moment they'll remember the rest of their lives. Now I will say this. There's a reason you get 96,000 people in Nebraska to go to a volleyball game in a football stadium, because it's like, what else are you doing on a Wednesday night in Nebraska?
That's fair. It was crazy. Wasn't it like 82,000 people? Am I making
96?
That up?
I thought it was 92,003.
Oh, is that what it was?
Unbelievable.
World record for attendance of a female sporting event.
It's incredible. Good job, Lincoln. Look, Rule turned around Temple. Turned around Baylor after those sanctions that crushed the program. It's just, this is monumental because it's not Nebraska that we grew up with. If you're in your 40s, you know a completely different Nebraska, not just the landscape, which is flat, but that's just the vibe of the program as well, right? Lincoln ain't what Lincoln used to be. It used to be a destination. Now it's literally corn. However, volleyball apparently is lit. Because if you want to get 90,000 plus to watch girls volleyball, it's all good. When we return, Brian Jones does a great job breaking down college football for CBS Sports, and he joins us here on Sharp Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, before you make your next bet, make sure you get over to VSiN.com, check out the betting splits, money and bets for every game, updated every 10 minutes straight from DraftKings, today's games and future events as well. Makes you a better better. Become a member over at VSiN.com/subscribe, but you can check out the splits, VSiN.com. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. This is Sharp Money. We're going to talk to Brian Jones, been doing it for a long time, covering college football for CBS Sports. As a matter of fact, he's going to be on air 7 East 4 West tonight before that NC State UConn kickoff, of course, former college and pro linebacker. And we say hi to Brian. Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, fellas?
Doing great. Thank you for joining. And you know what? We'll just pick up where we left off. We were talking about Rule and the task he has at hand at Nebraska. Brian, when you and I were growing up, Nebraska was very different. Can we talk about Rule and what's ahead of him here in Lincoln?
Yeah, no doubt, and you're correct. We're some old heads, man. We recall the heyday of Nebraska. I say we're old heads. I don't know how old you are. I'm an old head.
Me too.
But, okay, yeah. Well, we remember those excellent days, them and Oklahoma going at it, man, some great matchups, losing Tom Osborne over and over in the Orange Bowl, whether it was Miami or Florida State or whomever, and finally getting the victory and that national title, that first elusive one, and then a couple more. But what Matt Rule has done is he is torn this thing down to the studs. He has started all over, and that means he's teaching them football and the right way to go about playing football. He's teaching them accountability. He's teaching them to love each other, but also hold each other's feet to the fire. And that is building a great cohesive unit there. Just interviewing, you know, the players as I did at the Big Ten media days, and you could tell they were sincere in their comments. They weren't just canned responses. I would like to think I asked some pretty probing questions, you know, 60 Minutes style. So these guys stated to a man that they are buying what he is selling. Now, he has to get his type of guys in there. Now, Jeff Sims at quarterback, I love what he did when he jumped on the map versus Florida State during Georgia Tech. But I need to see more progression out of him. I need to see more accuracy out of him. But he's definitely an athlete. And I said back then he was a poor man's Vince Young, and he's still a poor man's Vince Young until he can lead a squad to a double-digit win season and definitely a championship. And I don't foresee that this year. But he gives them a chance at that quarterback position. But he's got to get the right dudes on campus. The mentality is there. They're buying in. But you need some more of them Jimmys and Joes, not just the X's and O's.
Like that breakdown. Let's go to your alma mater, the Texas Longhorns. A lot of questions surrounding what kind of season they're going to have this year. Tell me what you think Sark can do for this team, where Quinn Ewers can ascend to, and then the final result. Do they win the Big 12 and make the playoff?
Yes. Last question first. They accomplished both of those feats. I have them winning the Big 12. I have them going to the CFP along with Georgia, USC, and Michigan. USC's defense must get much better, and I suspect they will. They got some nice ingredients on that side of the ball. It goes without saying what the offense can do. But Texas looks the part now. I was at practice a week ago. They look the part. And I understand you don't win much on your looks unless you're Miss Universe. But they've got some cats over there on that D-line, man. They're thicker than barbecue pits. And that's what you need. You know, working and if for the CBS Sports with our eye on the SEC football and being on the sideline with those guys, Texas mirrors the size of those guys now. It's all about execution. Sark has recruited, I think, number three recruiting class this last one, number five prior to that. So the dudes are on campus. Now they just need to execute. Sark's one of the best at drawing up those said X's and O's. Defensively, they got better last year. So I love what they're doing. Offensively, name a better wide receiver room. Probably just Ohio State with A.D. Mitchell coming over from Georgia. You've got Xavier Worthy who's returning, Whittington. You've got Sanders at the tight end position. Offensive line is where I'm really going to be focused. You got a bunch of five stars on that deal. Now, let's just be honest. Bijan Robinson, what was he, the eighth or ninth pick to the Falcons, he made those guys look better than they were. So they need to step up. They need to own the line of scrimmage. Defensively, I think they're there. They have what they need. They, if not a pass rusher, you know, they got to have someone who consistently can get to the quarterback. But offensive line, those guys, that's where Texas is going to make some hay. Ewers, he'll be much better than he was last year coming back from the injuries. But Texas has everything they need, man. They'll just go do it.
Brian Jones joins us, doing a great job. You can check him out tonight, CBS Sports Network's Inside College Football 7 East. Who do you got tonight in Salt Lake? Let's talk about Napier, year two. He goes to Utah here to take on the Utes, but the Utes are without the quarterback and without the tight end. Who do you like?
Yeah, that doesn't hurt because Brent Cootie, man, if you recall, he had over 100 bills in receiving last year there in the swamp. I'm taking Utah, though. I love this linebacker room that they have. They have the transfer, Dumani from Stanford, and you've got Reed and the kid. You're talking about a legacy. This Lane Barton, his mama, his daddy, sister and brother, everybody played for the Utes in some form or fashion. So, you know, he's got to live up to a lot. But they're going to have their hands full with this running back, Etienne, as they did a season ago. Now, they don't have to tend with an Anthony Richardson. But I've got to see more out of Graham Mertz. You guys watched the game. You know, he stepped up on on the scene and showed out. Well, it was like 19 or 20 in his first game, and then he had this precipitous fall. You know, 2 years ago, 10 touchdowns on 11 interceptions. Last year, a little better, 19 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. But I've got to see something out of him. And this defense, they were woeful for the Gators a season ago. One of the worst, getting off the field. And so Utah, I don't know who's going to play quarterback. I'm hearing this Nate Johnson gives them the best option. He's a dual threat guy. Let's see if they insert him, or they go with the Bryson kid and who has some playing time. But defensively, they've got to put some pressure on Mertz. They've got to stop the running game. And both of these teams are built similar. Napier, what he built at Louisiana was a physical downhill football team. So they want to be tough-minded. And that's the same thing Kyle Whittingham has brought to Utah. That's his methodology, his philosophy. We're going to be a tough football team. So they match up well, I believe, in the trenches. It's going to come down to those special players, those skilled players outside of the interior.
From Brian Jones' perspective, which is a team that could surprise some people this year that maybe many people are not giving credit to?
Excellent question. A team that was surprised. I'm going to say Texas Tech. And we've got them Saturday night after Ohio State and Indiana on Big CBS. And Texas Tech has everyone returning on that offense. And Tyler Shuck, who, if he can stay healthy, but they played three different quarterbacks last year, and they really didn't skip a beat. Now, Donovan Smith has transferred to the University of Houston. But I say Texas Tech, with everybody on that offense back, defensively they lost the first-round pick at the edge position. But if they get their defense straight, they could make some noise in the Big 12.
Does Brian Jones have Georgia three-peating?
I think Georgia would three-peat. Now, Georgia, if you look at this schedule, I don't think they're going to really be crash-tested a lot. Tennessee, Joe Milton, offensively, there's a reason I picked them to beat Bama last year is because I thought they could apply some pressure to that backhand, and that's exactly what Ohio State did to Georgia in the playoffs. And if you recall, in the SEC championship game, a hobbled Jaden Daniels and the backup quarterback Nussmeier, you know, they posted 30 on that defense. Now they still got beat by 30, but if you can hold up up front and you can pass on this defense, and especially if you are a dual threat quarterback, that was the elixir for Bama when they were ruling college football. It will be for anyone that's going to test Georgia as well. So I can see them losing the SEC championship game and still getting to the CFP and winning it all. So, yes.
Brian, you mentioned you'd like the Trojans to get to the playoff. Does Caleb Williams then go back-to-back on the Heisman?
I'm not going to count him out. He's already had a heck of a first impression Heisman moment in that game last week versus San Jose State. He bobbles a snap, somehow gobbles it back up, and chucks it 75 yards while dude's bearing down on him, hitting him in his chest. So way to welcome in the 2023 season reigning Heisman winner. If he continues to do that and stays away from painting his fingernails in the Pac-12 title game, he might be all right and win it again.
We'll be watching Inside College Football on CBS Sports Network tonight with Brian Jones and the crew. You can find Brian on Twitter at JonesN4Mo. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate you.
All right, guys. Y'all take care.
Thank you.
Okay, take care, Brian. Great job. All right, when we return, Amal's College Football Futures, mentalist style. We're going to have a little fun with it. Dustin thinks he knows Amal. It's like Starchy and Hutch. Maybe that's a very old reference. However, they know each other. There's a simpatico. That's like the oldest reference ever. You'll see. We're coming back. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The updated NFL betting guide was just released today. Throughout the NFL preseason, we were all over it, analyzing, reevaluating the teams. You get picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, how to use those VSIN betting splits we always talk about, and football contest strategies. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, Now's the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as low as $19, or you can save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Sign up today, VSiN.com/subscribe. It's VSiN.com/subscribe. We got you back here on Sharp Money. VSiN, the sports betting network. A big night of college football. Week one kicks off tonight. Exciting games, including Nebraska at Minnesota. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. We are joined, speaking of Nebraska, a legend, Adam Carriker. You can find Adam and his son. They do a great job. Carriker Chronicles on YouTube. Make sure you check that out. It's really cool. At Adam Carriker 94 on Twitter. And I bring Twitter up because earlier today, we'll jump right into it, Adam. You've got a prediction over at Adam Carriker 94, and that is a good start for Matt Rhule in Nebraska, 24-17. Let's talk about the game tonight.
Yeah, I'm excited, and it's interesting because I actually did a whole like preview of year one for Matt Rhule, and I had him going 7-5. And in that preview show, I actually had us losing to Minnesota. So when I went to do the Minnesota breakdown, I fully expected to predict a loss. It was interesting because I do a Big Ten show as well. And we literally had a Minnesota insider come on the show, and he broke down a whole bunch of stuff. And it's a bunch of information that I would have found on my own. He just made my life a little bit easier. And they have a whole lot of new. Now, PJ Fleck's a really good coach. Okay, he's built a really good program, built them back up there at Minnesota. They very well could win tonight. I think what I'm thinking and what switched my mind is Nebraska obviously has a ton of new. Minnesota has a ton of new. Okay, they have nearly 3,000 snaps worth of experience that have left their back seven. Now, they still got one of the best players in the Big Ten at safety, and they got a whole bunch of playmakers, a wide receiver, and on the tight end, at the tight end position, but they got a new quarterback, running back by committee, which means nobody stood out just yet, and a revamped offensive line. And my thought is, man, there's so much new on their side, so much new on Nebraska's side. But I think everyone knows what to expect out of Minnesota schematically. I don't think anybody knows what to expect out of Nebraska schematically. So I'm kind of hoping and thinking maybe that that's a little bit of an edge. But I do expect it to be game one, probably a little sloppy. You know, that's how game ones tend to be, probably close, maybe low scoring. So who knows who wins. But I did go with Nebraska just because I think they've got a little bit of the element of surprise on their side.
Adam, kind of getting away from the game a little bit, going big picture with the Huskers. Where does Matt Rhule take this program? Because for people that don't know, this is a program from 1969 to 1997, never lost four games in a season for 29 straight seasons.
Yeah, I mean, there was what, the 30-40-year consecutive bowl appearance streak. You just referenced the nine-game win streak, nine wins or more. For a really long time, non-losing seasons was up around 40 years at one point. They still have the sellout streak that's going on at 389 consecutive sellouts strong. Obviously, just set the women's attendance record last night at the Nebraska volleyball game inside Memorial Stadium, 92,003 people. With Matt Rhule, it's interesting because when he was first hired, I'll just be frank, there was a lot of Nebraska fans who were kind of like, we don't know if we want this guy. You know, they weren't really sure. And the more I dove into him, he wants to run the ball. He wants to play smash mouth. He wants to be physical. He wants to be disciplined. He wants to build a program that Nebraska fans were used to watching for about 40 years. Okay. And so I think that's why Trev Alberts was so determined to hire him, the AD there. And I think it's going to be a much easier rebuild, if he's able to do it, than Temple, certainly Baylor with everything they had going on. The transfer portal makes it much easier. NIL is going to help Nebraska recruit and level that playing field just a little bit on the recruiting trail. I think sooner rather than later, I predicted them to go 7-5 this year. They haven't been to a bowl game in 6 years. And I think it can just build from there. The only thing that makes me nervous after this year about projecting too many wins is their schedule gets a lot tougher after this season, the next couple of seasons, but we'll see what happens when that time rolls around.
Adam Carriker joining us, and of course a former Nebraska great, defensive end, at Adam Carriker 94 on Twitter. Let's talk about Rhule. And listen, Adam, you know it. Everybody thought Scott Frost was a 10 out of 10 hire, and it just didn't work. Has Rule reached out to you and other alumni? Has he been welcoming? Give me an overview on Rule.
Yeah, he's been incredibly welcoming and very open. And it was interesting. It was right before, about a week before Christmas. And I get a call. It's like 10 at night, maybe 10:30, a call from a North Carolina number. And I'm like, oh, I ain't answering this. Somebody's just trying to sell me something. And then I get a text. And then I get another text. I'm like, what in the world is going on? So I open it up, and the text doesn't make any sense, talking about, you know, walking around Lincoln, you know, looking for a place to eat, trying to get to know everybody. And I'm like, well, what is this? And then at the very end, it just says Matt Rule. So I reread the whole text again, and I'm like, oh, that makes a lot more sense. So I called him back, and we chatted, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. And then he's like, hey, you know, if you ever want me to come on your show, I'd love to come on. So I interviewed him like 3 or 4 days later. So he's been very good with the media, very good when it comes to building relationships, very open. I think he has, obviously he's a good football coach and he's a proven program builder, but I think he has very good relational skills in general as well.
Adam, when you look at this program right now, you guys recruited nationally for a long time. You're from the state of Washington yourself. Can they get back to that? And has joining the Big Ten hurt or helped this team long-term?
Oh, man. So they've actually recruited well for a long time. If you go back to, I think, 2011 when we joined the Big Ten, there was only two times over the past 11 years that Nebraska has not had the top-ranked recruiting class in the Big Ten West. And the other two times were Wisconsin. And if you look back at the roster rankings going into the past four seasons, three of the past four seasons, Nebraska's had the fourth-ranked roster in the entire Big Ten, right behind Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, as far as talent. The talent has been there. The recruiting has, way more often than not, it's been there. As far as the Big Ten, initially, I thought it hurt us because it took us out of Texas and the pipeline and recruiting grounds that Nebraska had built there for years. Now, you bring in a guy like Rule, who already has connections to Texas when it comes to recruiting and relationships in those high schools, and now you watch it, what's happened with conference realignment. I mean, college football didn't even look like college football anymore. It's so different. And right now, if you're not a part of the SEC and the Big Ten, you're kind of looking around and you're like wondering what's going on. If you're one of those Pac-4 schools, you know what's going to happen. The ACC is kind of like hiding under a rock, hoping nobody notices them right now. And then you got the Big 12, who looked like they were going to go under. And now they look like, you know, if the ACC doesn't make it, are they one of the three conferences left standing potentially? With the conglomerate of whoever doesn't go to the Big Ten and SEC. So my point is the Big Ten is a national conference now. Once USC, UCLA join, then you got Oregon, Washington, you got Piscataway, New Jersey, all across America, all the way to the West Coast. And now you can truly recruit nationally, and now you've got ties into one of the three hotbeds of recruiting states in America when you go to Florida, Texas, and California. And I think Nebraska is going to end up playing those West Coast teams a lot if they go to some sort of a pod system or pod scheduling, because they're the, one of the closest schools to those West Coast schools. So they could actually benefit a lot from that. And then the amount of money that's being made in NIL, the amount of money that's being made per conference. The SEC is awesome, but nobody's touching the Big Ten right now. And it's because it's not as regional as the South is. It's more broad. And so I could argue, obviously, the top two conferences everyone probably wants to be in is SEC, Big Ten. And I know the SEC won, like, I don't know, 15 out of the last 10 national titles, if you listen to what they have to say. But when it comes to making money and things of that nature, the Big Ten's hard to beat. And I think ultimately that's going to show through their play on the field as well eventually.
Two important predictions for us on a gambling network, 24-17 easily. Covered the 7.5, obviously, with a straight up winner for Nebraska, Adam says. And then in the market over at DraftKings, the regular season win total is 6 for the Huskers. Adam's got them winning 7. So go over. Carriker Chronicles on YouTube. Make sure you check out the channel. It's awesome. And at Adam Carriker 94 on Twitter. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, buddy. I always wonder, because there are some dudes that come into a program that don't have a feel for it, like new head coaches, and they don't reach out to the alumni and ostracize them in that way. And it ends up just absolutely torpedoing the program because, you know, people get bitter. They talk about it on interviews like this, And that's Rule. He's just sending random text messages to old defensive ends.
Well, I love the question you asked him. I think it's very appropriate, and it's a great way. Think about this. Dustin mentioned Drake Kirkpatrick's son going to Alabama. Carricker's got six kids. He's a former first-round pick. It's time to go to Big Red, baby.
Genetics tell you a couple of them end up playing D1 football. We're back with rookie quarterback starting week one in the NFL.